You know, I got saved at the middle of February, 29 years ago. And so this time of year, everything was so new to me. You know, when you're brand new believer, the grass is greener, the sky is bluer. You have a new life. Everything is new. And so it was Easter time, and it was my first Easter to celebrate it in the right way, because I grew up with an Easter bunny, and that's all I knew. I did not know it had anything to do with God or Jesus. I knew people went to church, but there was no connection there. So this time of year, I always do a lot of reflecting, because I just remember back in those first few years as a new believer, when Easter would come around, and you have cool days and blue skies and then cloudy and, you know, just that whole feeling of new life and different. And then the Lord always brings to mind those songs that we used to sing. I don't know how many of you remember "Father, I Adore You," and "He Is Able," and just all those songs. It's a good feeling in your heart, in your mind, to reflect like that. I also like spring, because that's when both of my girls were born, and that's when we got married. And Damien and I will celebrate our 34th wedding anniversary this Saturday. So that's always a, you know, good time to reflect. And then our daughter Morgan will celebrate her 30th on Friday. And Edna had asked me the other day, "How does that make you feel to have a 30-year-old daughter?" I said, "It makes me feel 50. That's how it makes me feel." But I don't know. I've just been doing a lot of reflecting this week, and it's been good. Okay, here we are tonight, back in the Word. And this series of the shaping of a Christian woman and how our lives have been shaped. And I know I've said this from time to time, but I look back at when we began in September, and just for my own life, and oh my, how He has shaped me, how He has had His hands on me very firmly, and just a lot of trials, a lot of hard things, but good things, because of what He's done and how He has changed my thinking, my everything, from September to now. And I need it. I sure need it. And I'm very thankful to the Lord. So tonight, in our lesson of obedience, can you imagine what this world would be like if there were no laws or no rules at all? We kind of can imagine that, because we see people disobeying or breaking those laws and rules every single day. And it's horrible what comes forth from that, even when we have these laws, but people disobey them. So can you imagine if we didn't have any laws or rules or guidelines or anything? As I said, the lesson tonight is on obedience. And we all know what obedience means. We know what obey means, but I'm going to read it, the definition anyway. It means to follow instructions or behave in accordance with a law, rule, or order. It is complying with rules or regulations or submitting to somebody's authority. And we know that laws and rules and things are made, they're given, policies are made and all that, so that there would be order, and so that there would be boundaries, and there would be safety within those. Every single country has its own laws and rules and things for its citizens to follow, to obey, so that there would be peace and safety for the citizens. And we know that our country, when it was founded on biblical truths and biblical laws and all of that. And I started thinking about that and thinking of, and then you start, you know, it's a wonderful thing, but then you realize how far we've moved away from that, and then I can't think about it anymore. But there are foundational laws within our country, our city, society, and all that. And there's just those everyday kind of laws that we have to follow, we have to obey, we have to adhere to. If you did your homework, we asked you to just kind of think of a few of those and then think about what would happen if that law wasn't in place. Now, one that comes to mind, real practical law, is traffic laws. I mean, can you imagine if there were no traffic laws? What it would be like. We have traffic laws and we know what it's like out there. You're taking your life into your hands every time we get in a car because people do not obey the traffic laws. You know, every country has its own traffic laws. We've been able to travel a little bit. And so from country to country, you have to kind of learn their laws and their rules. And you kind of get the feel of how people drive and what you can do, what you can't do. And we've been in England where, you know, they're driving on the other side of the road. And that is extremely stressful. It's not a good thing. It's, you know, it was just Amy and I in the car and it was a little tense, you know, and then, we've been in India where most people, who have ever been to India have said, and I am in agreement with that, it is the worst place to drive because it looks like they have no law. They have no traffic law. You know what the bumper cars look like? That is what India looks like. And they drive in the center of the road and then they just move right when they get close. And I am not exaggerating. It is terrifying. They know what they're doing. They have their own laws and their rules. But if there wasn't any, or if people break them, there's chaos. There's accidents. There's fatalities. There has to be those laws, those rules in place, whether it's traffic laws or any kind of law, because it's safe. So every day we follow, we obey the laws of the land. But there is a higher law, and that is God's law and his law, his way, because he is truth and he is right. His ways are true and his ways are right and his ways are the best ways. And there is peace and there's order and there's safety in obeying his law, his word, his commands. They're put there for our protection. And way back in the book of Genesis, when God had spoke to Abraham, gave him that promise, I'm going to make of you a great nation. And then God did that. And then remember that little family of Israel was in Egypt for those years that they multiplied and became a nation. And then God took them out of Egypt, and those books of Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy are God's law that he spoke to his people. He chose to reveal it to his people. This is how I want you to live. Don't look at these other nations because they don't follow my ways. These are my ways. So he just simply laid out in those books his law, those Ten Commandments, and then all of the just very specific rules and regulations, dietary laws, hygiene laws. I mean, all of those kind of things, as you know, if you've read through those books or studied those books. It's God's law. It's his word. It's his truth. If you open your Bible to Deuteronomy chapter 11, His law is, don't live under your own law, live and do what's right in your own eyes, but live under my law, what I lay out. And in chapter 11, verse 26, it said, "Behold, I set before you today a blessing and a curse. the blessing if you obey the commandments of the Lord your God, which I command you today. And the curse, if you do not obey the commandments of the Lord your God, but turn aside from the way which I commanded you to today to go and to go after other gods, which you have not known. So God lays out this path of blessing and this path that's cursed. And this path of blessing, his laws, his ways, his commands. And he just tells them, he tells us, you follow me, this path is already blessed. There's blessing on that path. So when I step out and I'm obeying his commands and his ways, I am being blessed because the path is already blessed. This path, the path of disobedience, is already cursed. So when I disobey and I step out on that path, it's disaster. It is disaster for me. But he gives us a choice and he puts his law because there's safety and peace and blessing in that. Now, you know, over time that God's people, they started adding to the law with their own interpretation and their own rules and all of that. And it became very hard for them. And the people obeyed so that they wouldn't be cursed, so that they wouldn't die. They had to obey in order to live. And that's not what God had intended. Now, Jesus came and he fulfilled the law. He didn't come and destroy the law and say, well, okay, forget that. Now you don't have to do any of that. He came and he fulfilled that law. And he spoke to his disciples in John 14:15. He spoke to them then and he speaks to us today. And he tells them, he tells us, if you love me, keep my commandments. Keep my commandments. So that we're not to just obey so that we don't die. We don't get on that path of that's already cursed. That's not the motivation. You see, the motivation is now live for me and obey me. Live to obey. Not obey because I'm going to get in trouble. It's like as a parent, you want your children to obey you because they love you. You don't want to raise your children so that they obey you because you're going to yell and scream at them or lock them in a closet or something like that. You want them to obey you because they love you. They trust you. They know that you know what is right and what is good for them. It is a matter of the heart, this obedience out of love. Now, Jesus is our example in all things, in everything. And he is our example in this area of obedience. And he spoke again in John 6:38. He said, I have come down from heaven not to do my own will, but the will of him who sent me. He tells us he did not come down to do his own thing, to obey his own whatever he wanted to do, but he came to obey the Father, to do his will. Now, flip over to Philippians chapter 2, please. Philippians chapter 2, this in verses 5 through 8 are some of my favorites in the Bible. Philippians 2, 5. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who being in the form of God, did not consider it robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation, taking the form of a bondservant and coming in the likeness of men, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even the death of the cross. So Jesus, God the Son, he emptied himself. He came to this earth. He submitted himself to the will of the Father and became obedient all the way to the very end, to the point of death. Obedient every step of the way, Jesus obeyed. He said, "For I always do those things that please him." I would love to be able to say that. I want to do those things that please him, but I don't always do those things that please him. But Jesus did. I always do those things that please him. Our obedience to the Lord is right. It's required to follow after him. If anyone desires to be my disciple, deny yourself, pick up your cross, and follow me. If you love me, you keep my commandments. So obedience is just a huge and a very everyday part of a Christian's life. And what does the Lord tell us to do? Whether we're obeying his word or his still small voice when he speaks to us, it's just a part of our lives. And obedience, it's required, but it's also, it's pleasing to him. It pleases his heart for his children to obey, just like a parent with a child. You love your child even when they're disobedient, but it sure pleases you when they are obedient. And Jesus said again, if you love me, keep my commandments. Our obedience demonstrates our love for him, to him, and it also demonstrates our love for him to other people. When he looks at our lives and he sees obedience, it says, "I love you," to him. And when we look at others' lives and there is an obedient Christian, we know that that person loves the Lord. Because when you look at a very disobedient person, you question that. Say, well, how can you say, you know, it's more than words. It's more than words. It is a life. And that's what Jesus said. If you love me, you're going to demonstrate that love toward me by being obedient. Now, if we have a right, a healthy, a growing relationship with the Lord. And here we are. We come to Bible study every Wednesday night. We're wanting to grow. We're wanting to please the Lord. We're wanting to move on in a deeper place in our relationship with the Lord. Then obedience will characterize our lives. It just will. In all of these commands of his, we will live holy, we'll live pure life. Doesn't mean we're perfect. Nobody is perfect. But it means we're seeking to do what is right. And we want to please him. We want to be his disciple. We want to be Christ-like. So in all these areas that are laid out and we're following them, we're trying to be kind, we're trying to be loving, we're trying to live this upright, holy life, others would be able to see that. And, you know, we can look around the room. We a lot of us know each other, and we know, yes, that's a follower of Christ. That's an obedient person. You know, when you have very willful disobedience, it's pretty obvious, and it's pretty red flag, that person has having a big problem right now in their relationship with the Lord, when there's just total willful disobedience. So for the most part, we are obeying him. We're seeking after him. We're growing in him. But he not only wants us to be obedient in those big areas, but in the in the little areas and in those everyday situations in our lives, or a lot in those unseen areas. And he doesn't want us to consider his commands, whether they are written or he speaks to our hearts, as an option, because they're not. They are a command, and that's where this obedience comes in all of those little areas. So we might look at our life overall and think, yes, okay, I'm following after the Lord, I am obedient. But I don't know about you, but this lesson to me was very, very searching. Because I start thinking about those little areas. Just those little things where maybe the Lord will speak to you and say, you're in a conversation and he will just speak to you and you just know that you're not supposed to say what you're going to say. And you say it anyway. That would be disobeying. Those little areas like that. Or you have this prompting to call someone, to send a note to someone, and you don't do it. Those are the little areas that we, for whatever reason, sinful nature, we seem to consider options. And they're not options. They are his command. His word is his command, but what he speaks to our hearts in our daily lives, that is also his command. So when the Lord does speak to us, again, through his word or privately, we need to take heed. And this was just a really good reminder for me, for us. You know, this is the Lord telling me to do this. This isn't so-and-so. I mean, you know, we can be really used to disregarding rules and things. And we just kind of do our own thing. They wanted me to do that, but they didn't really, it doesn't really matter. I'll just do this, you know. And we carry that over in our relationship with the Lord, and we should not. So when he speaks to us, it isn't an option to do or not to do. It's not, it shouldn't disregard it. We have a choice, yes. But we can't, and we shouldn't fool ourselves into thinking we're obeying when we're not. We just disobeyed. In Isaiah 50, it speaks of the Messiah's devotional life, and that morning by morning, the Lord God would awaken him and give him the tongue of the learned and give him the ears to hear and to teach him what to say and how to say it each and every day. And it speaks that, excuse me, in Isaiah, but we see it all through the Gospels in Jesus' life, when he would go out early in the morning to pray and to seek the Father. And then when he says, I didn't come to do my will, I came to do my Father's will, and I do always those things that please him. We know that he was communing with his Father, and he was doing what his Father's will, what did his Father have for him that day? Can you imagine if Jesus disregarded what his Father had told him to do? Or if he put it off? Or he would just pick and choose? The blind would not have received their sight. The lame would not have walked. The dead would not have risen. Jesus was obedient to the Father's will daily in all of those things. You know, the Lord, the Father, he was leading Jesus, communing, just like he does with us. He speaks to us every day. He leads us every day. And we need to, just as Jesus, to do our Father's will. To obey, to not put it off to tomorrow, to not disregard it, to not consider it an option. It's not an option. I read something years and years ago that really stuck with me, and I put the quote in the homework and read it from Joy Dawson's book, Intimate Friendship with God. And the Lord brings this to mind quite often in my life over the years. Instant, joyful, and whole obedience to God is biblical obedience. Anything else is disobedience. Delayed obedience is disobedience. Partial obedience is disobedience. And doing what God has asked with murmuring is disobedience. Now, the first time I read that, I didn't like it. I just didn't. Because I didn't want to think that delayed obedience was disobedience, or a little grumbling, or a little partial, I'll do it halfway. I didn't want to think that that was disobedience. But you know what? She's right. It's right. Biblical obedience truly is instant, it's joyful, and it's whole. It's complete. That is what we are to do every single day, every time He speaks to us. Now, I know none of us are perfect. So you don't beat yourself up over the fact that you don't do that, but rather say, okay, I'm going to be aware of this, and I'm going to seek to please You, and because I love You, Lord, and I'm going to take heed, and I'm going to discipline myself to obey, just like we do with our children. They don't want to do what we want them to do. And you train them, you discipline them so that they have a disciplined life and self-control so that they do obey. And it's the same thing with us. This instant obedience, you know, that illustration all the time when you are raising children and you want them to obey you the first time. You don't want to train them to obey you on counting, you know, when I get to 10 or the 14th time I've said it or whatever. You want them to do it the first time that you tell them, because what if the child runs out in the middle of the street and you say stop and they don't obey you? It could mean their life. You know, I mean, it makes sense. So for us, we need to obey the first time the Lord tells us to do something. And if you haven't tried that, you try it and see how blessed you will be. But Abraham is a wonderful example of this instant obedience in Genesis, where God came to Abraham and said, take now your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you. That is a very hard command. Now, God is not going to ask us that. This, of course, is a whole type of Jesus and the Father. But He asked Abraham, commanded Abraham, go take your son that you waited 25 years for. And now, you know, he's older. So take him and offer him as a sacrifice. Instant obedience. The next verse, it tells us, so Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, and took two of his young men with him, and Isaac his son, and he split the wood for the burnt offering, and he arose, and he went to the place of which God had told him. Instant obedience. Now, we don't know what was going on in Abraham's mind, what kind of conversations he had. You know, that it was not recorded. God has recorded other things in His Word that lets us know about the person. But this, the next morning, he just did what God had commanded him to do. No delay. No considering. No disregarding. No counting that as an option. Oh, well, Lord, You know my heart. You know I would. But I don't really have to do it. None of that. What we see, what we read, is the next morning he did exactly what God had commanded him to do. And then that joyful obedience. Maybe that's the hard part for you. The joyful obedience. Psalm 40, verse 8, it says, I delight to do your will, O my God, and your law is within my heart. Ah, I delight to do your will. I joy in doing your will. That's joyful obedience. And again, back to parenting with the child, because it's just such a perfect example. You know, our children obey a lot of times, and maybe most of the time, because you're the mother and they don't want a spanking or don't want to be disciplined, they are going to do it. But it's not joyful. But I tell you, those times when your child joyfully obeys, what does that do to your heart? It's the best thing. It is the best thing. When you have your child, tell them one time to do something, and they just get up and they just go do it. There's no greater joy for a mom. I mean, it's like, ah, this is wonderful. Can you imagine the Lord, my children, joyfully obeying me? Because they trust me, because they know I would not ask them to do anything that's going to harm them. It's always going to be good for them. Doesn't mean it's going to be easy, but it's going to be good. That joyful, Jesus delighted in doing God's will. And John tells us that the Lord's commands are not burdensome. They're not grievous. They're not heavy. They're not severe. They're not stern or cruel. Doesn't mean they're just easy. Does not mean that. But there is always a cost of discipleship. But we can do it with joy. And the love that we have for the Lord can make keeping those commandments a delight and not a burden. That I have to. I have to. You know, I have to zip my lip. I have to do this. I have to do that. Instead of, Lord, I want to please your heart. I get to do this. Whatever you tell me, that I will do. I want to get there. And the whole obedience. Back to Abraham. Tells us that Abraham built an altar there and placed the wood in order. And he bound Isaac, his son, and he laid him on the altar upon the wood. And Abraham stretched out his hand and he took the knife to slay his son. That's whole obedience. We know that God intervened and he provided himself for that sacrifice. But that is whole obedience. You know, there was no tying him up and then just waiting to see what happens. You know, it was, I'm going to do this exactly the way that you asked me. And you know, sometimes that comes with a price. But Abraham was willing, because he knew God had promised and he knew he would be able to raise him from the dead. And we know that if our obedience comes with a price, that God will work everything together for good. Now, King Saul is a great example of disobedience, of his partial obedience, which is disobedience. You know, God had told him to utterly destroy the Amalekites. He was very specific. Do not save anyone, not even the livestock. Utterly destroy them. And Saul did not. He did not. He fought them, but he didn't destroy all of them. He saved Agag, the king, and he saved all the best sheep and all the other livestock. And he then replaced his obedience with sacrifice, or at least tried to, because he thought, well, you know, I did enough. I did enough. And so I'll just sacrifice to the Lord and he'll be happy with that. But Samuel said to him, has the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice. To obey is better than anything else we think we can replace it with. And God saw his partial obedience as disobedience. In fact, he called it rebellion. And a rejection of him. And because you have rejected me by not obeying, that he was rejected as being king. So obedience is a very serious thing, and God doesn't take it lightly. He doesn't overlook it. He's patient. He's long-suffering. He's merciful. He's gracious. And so for those who love the Lord and we are trying, there's no willful disobedience. There is that slipping, that sin, that just giving into the flesh. God knows, and He is patient with us, but not with that willful, in your face, I am not going to obey. I'm not going to do that. There's severe consequences there. And it's times like this, and this kind of a lesson, and this is, you know, if the Lord has been speaking to your heart, you probably have already done this. But where we say, Lord, search me. Search my heart. You know, try me. Reveal to me. Is there anything there, any area in my life of disobedience? Anything there that I have partially obeyed, I've delayed my obedience, that I've just kind of brushed off as an option? Is there anything in my life and any area that is what I've been doing? And then, Lord, show me and then forgive me and give me the strength and the power and the will to obey. We very easily can get into these habits of only obeying at our convenience, only doing things at our convenience. He wants us to do this, and we say, oh, okay, but first I need to do this, and I need to do that, and I need to do that, and I need to do this, but I will obey. I just won't do it now when you told me to. Have we gotten into the habit of that? Have I gotten into the habit of that? Or have I gotten into the habit of thinking, oh, well, that's a nice suggestion. Yeah, that's probably a good thing to do, but I'm very busy, or, you know, whatever. Or just doing it halfway. Well, that's really good enough because I just don't have time to do this whole thing, or that would really require a lot, or that would inconvenience me or whatever. So I'll just do it halfway and think it's okay. And it's not. It really isn't okay with the Lord. If you love me, keep my commands. To demonstrate our love toward him, we need to obey. And then joyfully, without grumbling. You know, it's like submission, you know. You can do that outwardly, and inwardly you're rebelling. You can obey outwardly in whatever the Lord is telling you to do. But, you know, it's a matter of our heart, because it can look fine, but we're not fooling the Lord. He sees our heart. He knows. And that displeases him. And he wants that wholehearted, joyful obedience in our lives, where we are quick to say, yes, Lord. Yes, Lord, I will do it, and I will do it now. It is a discipline. It is learning to hear his voice, but it's also part of walking in the fear of the Lord, and we'll talk about that in the coming weeks. But in taking this area of obedience seriously. Again, I know that, you know, it can be a hard lesson. It can be a convicting lesson. But when I look at it and ask the Lord to search my heart, and then I take my heart and I take my mind back to the cross, and I see the love that is there. It tells us Romans 5:8, God demonstrates his own love toward us, in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. His demonstration of love toward us is that he sent his son. He sent a savior to us to save us from our sin, from hell, from ourselves. He loves. He's made a way for us. And John tells us that if we love him because he first loved us, and we receive his love and we know his love and we're overwhelmed by his love. And again, this time of year when Easter is this Sunday and we have the Good Friday service and we just can reflect on what he has done for us. The love that was there, that it would just, we would respond in loving him and in demonstrating that by our obedience. John also said, for this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments. So let's practice showing him our love by instant, joyful, and whole obedience. The next time he speaks to our hearts, might be tonight, might be in the tomorrow morning, might whenever it might be, when we hear his voice telling us to do something, let's give ear to that and let our hearts say, yes, Lord, and then let's do it right then. That'll fill your heart with joy, and it'll please him. And Father, just thank you for loving us to put these things in your word and these verses that tell us that if we love you, we'll keep your commands. And that your commands they're not grievous, they're not stern, they're for our own good. And thank you for searching our hearts for that refiner's fire. Thank you for how you speak to us, Lord, and how you reveal to us those areas that you want to remove from our lives. Let's just spend just a few moments just between you and the Lord, just quietly asking him to search your heart, search my heart.